Welcome to the Alpha Girl Confidence Podcast, where we are empowering youth female athletes to play and live confidently. My name is Shay Hatto, and each week I will bring you new episodes to teach you the strategies and tools that you need in order to live a confident, empowered life, both on and off the playing field. What's up, and welcome back to episode 148. Today's episode is a good one. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Julia Iyer, who is not only an amazing human being, but a very good friend. Julia is a sports neuroscientist who talks loudly about load management, speed, pain, menstruation, stress, LGBTQA issues, and athlete mental health. Before founding White Lion Performance Group, she coached at the collegiate level and researched in clinical psychology. She now partners with clubs and institutions as a sport neuroscience consultant, athletic coach, and instructor. She prioritizes healthy humans over everything, and she has a special TED Talk coming out on September 18th, so make sure you keep your eye out for that. In this conversation, we talked about all things period and menstrual cycles, how it affects performance. We talked about athlete mental health, specifically as, you know, what's been going on in the Olympics with Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka. And we also got into stress management. So I'm so excited for you to check out this episode. And when you're done listening, make sure that you share it. Make sure that you tag us on social media. And I hope you enjoy it. Julia, what's up? Welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to have you.
What's up, Coach Shay? I'm stoked to be here.
So yeah,
dive right in.
It's been, I was looking back at our last episode, which was August 28th. So almost exactly 2 years ago, like insane.
Crazy.
And also, I know I shared this with you like a while back, you probably don't remember, but I was looking a while back and that episode of, with you in it was like the highest downloaded episode. So it's still probably top five. So like, I'm like, well, why has it been 2 years since I've had you on? Like, let's go. And so I'm excited to have you back on. And I know this episode will probably, you know, surpass all others. So I'm stoked for it. Let's do it.
It doesn't have to break any records or surpass anything. Let's just bring the goods. I'm excited. A lot has happened in 2 years and we've both become two totally different people in 2 years with really cool stories and really cool experiences. So I'm really excited to see you again and talk to your people. So thanks for letting me have the mic today.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I was going to say is we've both evolved and not only we have evolved so much, but like the world has evolved so much since then. And so like, tell us, cause I know like I have a lot of new listeners that probably don't know you. So tell everyone, who are you and what do you do?
My bio has changed since then too. That's wild. So 2 years ago, I lived in a completely different place. I lived in Cologne and I was finishing up my master's in sport neuroscience at the sport university there. And now that's done. I'm published scientist and all of that. So now I'm a sport neuroscientist, which means I'm a psychologist plus a sport scientist who studied neuroscience in order to help humans perform at their max capacity. And I say humans specifically because we do humans and then athletes and then sports specific players. But we always, at my company, White Lion, we always treat the human first and then we build on top of that. So that includes talking about things right out the get like mental health, physical health, menstruation, hormone concerns, things that most people wouldn't consider to be super pregnancy even. So things that wouldn't be considered normal to talk about in daily life with fitness coaches or personal trainers or strength coaches. That's what we talk about right out the get. So,
that's why I love talking to you. Like, first of all, like a sports neuroscientist, like that's insane. Like that just sounds insane to me. But also
super
just like,
pretentious, right?
It's like, it is. It's like, okay, like, ooh, like, you know, okay. But like, you're just so real. And like, I love how you prioritize the human first, and we'll talk about your TED Talk later. Cause I want to kind of let everyone know about that. Before we get into like periods and mental health and like all of that stuff, I want to kind of start with a kind of, I want to call it a deep question. Maybe it's not that deep, but I want to know, like, I think this is a great place to start. Like, I want you to think like what is one of the biggest obstacles that you've gone through in your life that has turned into one of the biggest blessings?
Oh my God.
I know it is kind of deep.
I might give me 15 seconds and cut this part out. No, I'm just kidding. 15. I'll talk the whole time while I'm thinking. The first thing that comes to mind is, so my childhood was not like roses, wasn't dandy, wasn't everything. Sports saved me in a lot of ways because it was a way for me to like reconnect with my body, reconnect with like what is an emotion that is other than aggression. It allowed me to get a lot of things out. It allowed me, it was one of the only places where I had community outside of very, very conservative church environment that was literally like, you can only have to do with these people, and sports was my only outside world. So it saved me a lot of ways, like giving me another perspective. When my brother passed away in a car accident in 2014, and I was super still locked up, like, how am I going to fix myself? How am I going to fix, you know, my brain? How am I going to fix my body? I ended my career with a lot of injuries that were, you know, a mix of the psychophysiological, my mental health was terrible and my physical health was terrible. And that combined just didn't make a healthy human or healthy athlete. And when he passed away, it was like this expansion from everything that I had looking inside of me now has to come out somehow. Like, I could die at any minute. And if I die with all of that inside of me, it doesn't serve the world in any way. So now I want to like give any information that's been processed through my brain that I can use for myself and give it to other people so that it's like accessible to them. So
you're amazing. Yeah, you're amazing. We could
really,
just
really prove to me how short life is, no matter how, no matter how smart we are, we can't save anything or take anything with us. So.
And that's kind of why I wanted to start with that question. Cause a lot of that, you know, like we go through so many tough things in our life, so many obstacles, but what we fail to realize a lot of the times is that those obstacles and those, you know, challenges that we go through can end up, if we have the right mindset about it and the right outlook, can end up to be the best parts of your life. Right. Yeah. And so that's why I kind of wanted to start with that. Cause I think you can really tell a lot about a person and about what they do and why they do it based on kind of what you've gone through and your previous life, shall we say?
Yeah. What I'm learning is like, you can first actually touch the great parts of the terrible things that happen to you when you start working on the terrible things that happen to you. Like everything that we see is a loss until we've actually like dealt with the ramifications of that, until we've like mentally, physically, emotionally gotten through that. And then we can see, you know, the bright side or the light at the end of the tunnel, whatever kitschy metaphor you want to use,
right?
But it has to be dealt with first and resolved. And once it's resolved, then there's like, now I can use this for good somehow, or now this has changed me in a positive way, something like that. I mean, obviously there's terrible things that happen in the world, but once you've grieved that and moved on, now it's like, now this is my superpower.
I love this. Okay. So I actually we're definitely going to talk about mental health. I was going to do that at the end. I was like, let's end with that. But we're already talking about it. So like, I love how you're talking about like grieve the things that need to be grieved, because I think so often, and when we're going through hard times, we try to hide our emotions. We're told our whole lives, don't cry. You know, like we're taught our whole lives to suppress our emotions, and we can never work through these things. And as specifically as it relates to COVID, I hope saying the word COVID doesn't, you know, flag us, but like talking about that over the last, you know, almost 2 years, how do you think for you personally and for your athletes, how do you see COVID? How do you think that affected, you know, mental health, and maybe even, in my opinion, it brought a lot of light to a lot of darkness as well?
A lot of light to a lot of darkness, and the darkness kind of expanded while the light expanded as well. So I feel like we see the fact that a lot more things are dark than we realized before. Like we kind of, I personally had a more rosy vision of the world before. Yeah. I mean, I've always been specific and like this, this, and this is not optimal, those kinds of things. But now I see more specifically like that is terrible. That is terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, this thing over here is actually really dark, and it's shown light on things where it's like, no, those are actually dark things that need to be addressed or need to be like shut down completely. And COVID has brought those things to life, or to light, better said. As far as my athletes, a big thing that we've been working on is grieving the lost time, the lost opportunities, and the fact that a lot of them are between 15 and 19 years old and will never get this time back again, and have been spending the last like 2 years stuck in the house with their parents and siblings instead of like getting to go out and have relationships or be alive or go to school, or a lot of, especially in Germany, feeling like their voices aren't heard because people are worried about like really, really young babies getting it, and then older people. And obviously like adults can get vaccinated or whatever, but here the kids don't get vaccinated. I don't know how it is in the States. Is it to 12 now?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah.
we're not saying do it or don't do it, but it's more like the kids' voices here, they feel very much like they're not heard at all. And that's yeah. pretty upsetting to mental health. So grieving the fact of like, I feel like I'm being pushed to the background. I feel like I'm being disregarded, those kinds of things.
Right.
And then me personally acknowledging that with them and then helping them to acknowledge that as well, because you can't really grieve something unless you've acknowledged that it's painful for you and difficult for you. So that's been a really big thing. The time that they've lost, the opportunities that they've lost. And obviously some of them have lost their last years of playing sports completely in pro leagues or whatever, because you 19, you age out, or done with high school, you age out, or done with college, your season got canceled, whatever. So mm-hmm. a lot of it has been grieving the lost time.
And do you think that COVID has made, you know, made it harder on, we'll say just say teenagers. Do you think it's made it harder on teenagers' mental health? Or do you just think that it's more okay to talk about it now? And so that's why we're seeing it more often.
I think we notice the glaring lack of resources for teenagers' yeah. mental health right now. Definitely. I just think it's come to light more. Like, it's easier to talk about it. The fact that it's more open, and then having to literally acknowledge, sorry, we don't have the resources for you. Like, here in Germany, it's pretty bad with mm. all therapists being booked out, all psychiatrists being booked out for like months.
Yeah.
And it's like, even if you need help, you need to get like emergency help then, because
right.
there's just like no resources left because everybody's struggling, which makes it easier to admit that you're struggling, right. obviously. But I don't think that this is new. No, not at all.
I agree. And for you, personally, and I guess, you know, for your athletes, what practices or routines do you do yourself or share with your athletes that can improve their mental health in a time like this?
So we stick to structure, because neurologically the brain loves structure. Our nervous system loves structure. It keeps us from having to make a ton of decisions all the time. And decisions tend to be stressors. Because we tend to view a lot of things, you know, like stress is not positive or negative. It's just entirely neutral.
Yeah.
My camera is like, you're good. Having like the glory shining on me.
You look, but, yeah, you look like a, you just look so glowing right now.
I mean, I am like in the Vatican right now, you guys. That's what it looks like through my window. But anyway, sunset in Germany, but where were we?
Oh, practices, routines, structure. You're talking about structure.
Yes. So our nervous systems love structure so much. It keeps us from having to make decisions, and decisions can be stressors. So stress isn't necessarily positive or negative. Like I said, it's neutral, but we tend to perceive a lot of decisions as being negatively stressful for us. And then that takes away the energy that we can use, quote unquote, positively towards other things. So I would rather my athletes save their energy and work on school or work on training or work on something else instead of deciding like what color shirt they're going to wear or if they're going to go to training this time or not. And just like having the structure of, here's my morning routine. Here's my night routine. I know that this is what I do when I wake up. I know that this is what I generally eat for breakfast, like simplifying things so that they don't have to use a lot of mental real estate throughout the day on dumb stuff, like yeah. stuff that is not super relevant, decisions that don't like really make a difference, especially because a lot of them, my athletes specifically, tend to be more self-critical and do a lot of paralysis by analysis
yes.
and just get stuck with small decisions because they're tired, because they're stressed out. They don't have a lot of mental real estate left over from it being a pandemic, school, sports, whatever. And so being able to take away the dumb, meaningless decisions out of their day with just a little bit more structure, having them make lists the night before yes. they wake up so that they know what they're starting with the next day. Here's my morning routine. Now I'm immediately going to do this. Now I feel like I ate the frog. I did something productive today, and now I can move on. Yep. And, you know, we also schedule in free time is another part of structure is mm-hmm. I'm really big on load management in training mm-hmm. and, that carries over into normal life. So, okay, we're going to work for this much. And then when you're done with this, we're going to take a rest. And this is just like a scheduled rest period. You can play, you can hang out, you can sleep, try not to be on your phone. If you can try and get out in nature, but this is just like your time to gel out and do whatever. Yeah. So taking rest as seriously as work is also really important and part of our structure.
I love that. Cause I think so often we like feel guilty when we take rest and when we have fun. It's like, no, I should be doing something. I should be
yeah.
you know, getting better. But what we don't realize is most of the time taking that rest and relaxing is actually doing you way more good than it is harm. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like the concept of supercompensation, which mm-hmm. I don't know if your athletes would know what that is, but in sports science, we have, it's called general adaption syndrome. And it's a very old, probably outdated concept of how we adapt to stress. Mm-hmm. And it's, you apply a new stressor and then you're, performance actually drops off. It decreases and it has a little swoop. Basically, you've had this new stressor, yeah. you're tired, and now it drops off. And then you rest. Through that recovery, your body heals, your brain heals, your nervous system can regenerate, and then you actually improve afterwards. Mm, it's the same thing with mental performance, emotional, whatever. So like me personally, I have 2 hours after I go to therapy on Wednesday morning where I'm not doing anything. And then I come back bawling afterwards. So instead of beating myself up for those 2 hours, like, it was just a therapy session, it wasn't that bad, or it was just a training session, whatever. And then I go take my shower, I take my little post-therapy nap, I eat my food, I get it together, and then I'm killing it that afternoon. So yeah. we actually perform better through rest. Our body can't heal without it. So
yeah. And you, and you were talking a little bit about paralysis by overanalysis. And
yeah.
I think that's a great concept, because I was talking to one of my players about it, who was talking about, like, in a game, if she had a bad shot, she would try to break down every little mechanical thing. And I was like, I don't think that's the right thing to do. Like, because then you're going to overanalyze every little thing. And that's like, you need to focus on the whole movement. And so mm-hmm. talk a little bit about what is a paralysis by overanalysis, and like, I guess, how can we prevent that? Cause I know a lot of kids think, well, if I do something wrong in a game, I need to sit there and analyze it. But why is that harmful?
Because you're using up your focus that should be on the game. Like, you need to bookmark that moment in your mind for later.
Yep.
And say, I'll feedback myself when this is appropriate. And I'll tell you how we do that at Wide Line Leader. Awesome. But I'm going to bookmark this. And then after the game, I'll think about it. Don't think that I forgot about this. Don't worry, I'm coming back. And then you go back and focus. Mm-hmm. Now, the big thing that we know in sports neuroscience and in sports psychology as well, is a lot of times athletes they do this paralysis by analysis, right? Where they can't let mistakes go. And then they try and overcompensate in their performance in order to do something better. And that overcompensation is just an energy waste, basically.
Yeah.
Because then they've tired themselves out double as fast, mentally, emotionally, and physically.
Right.
And you can't win doing that. It's just the consistency of focusing, of showing up and consistently giving whatever 100% mm-hmm. looks like there. So right. don't expect more than 100% for yourself. It's like, it's cool to say, I'm giving my 110, I'm giving my 120. Yeah. Like, I don't care about that. I just want 100 and whatever it looks like right now.
Right.
Now, after the game, we have something that we learned from the Navy SEAL, David Goggins. Have you read any of his stuff? Hurt Me and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we use the after action report, the live autopsy, where we basically break down what went well. Like, where did you really ball out? Where did you really succeed? And we do that, like, praise, be really generous, praise yourself for the things that you did well, and then say, what made this go different than expected? Not what went badly. It's went different than expected. Like, the expectation was clearly this. What steered that away? And mm-hmm. how can we learn from this? So it's like, what did I do well? How did this turn out differently than expected? Like, how did this go wrong, basically? And what can we do better to make sure that that never happens again? Got the learning takeaway, and it's literally on a sheet of paper with those three questions. And yeah, it's stuck. Yeah.
So, no, because that's actually what I teach with my girls, is I say, like, have a notebook in your bag or something.
Yeah.
So that after the game, I just call it a post-game routine, but you're focusing more so on the what went well, because naturally we always focus on what didn't go well. And we, right. you know, ruminate those, like, thoughts, like, you know, all night and maybe even the next day. But then also it's like shelving that, or you said bookmarking it, so that when you do that journaling, then you can really kind of break that down. But in the game, it's like, when you're thinking about all of the things you need to work on, you're not fully present on the game itself. And so you're living in the past and you're not 100%. Focused on the present. Right. And that's never going to go well.
It's literally impossible. You can't be 100% mentally, emotionally, physically in the game if you're somewhere else. And because our brain loves routines and it likes being able to predict things, it'll get used to doing that after the game. So it's kind of like, you don't have to be like, okay, stop, I'll come back to you later. It's like, oh, I'm not done with you. Pause. And continue. And then your brain's like, all right, now it's time to get that after action report out and blah, blah, blah. So your brain gets used to that and it gets easier to drop it. And that can be like your mistake routine or your mistake ritual, whatever it is. I'll be back to you. Don't think that I forgot. and your brain gets used to that. But what's so cool about the AARs, or as you said, your post-game routine, is taking out the old ones and comparing them to new ones and being like, okay, so remember that thing that you used to struggle with? You just said in this game that you did that exceptionally well. So I would call that progress.
Yeah. I mean, you have
to be like a long record of great things that you've done.
Yeah. And that's like, cause when we're in it, we can't really see our progress when we're in it. So that's really valuable to like have a notebook so that you can kind of flip through and go back and like, wow, this is what I was doing, you know, 2 months ago. Now I've completely surpassed that. And you're always going to have new challenges, but that's really important to be able to measure your progress and celebrate that progress. So I love that.
Having new challenges is actually a great thing.
Yeah. If you don't, that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Like if you're struggling with the same thing, it means you're plateauing. But if you always have new challenges, it means you're actually moving forward and doing something. Yeah. So,
or if you have no challenges at all, then are you even,
I don't even have friends like that. So I can't relate.
Totally.
I don't know anybody like that.
No, I mean, honestly, like the saying, like, if you're not growing, you're dying, you know, it's the same concept. So yeah. So I want to talk about Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka for a minute.
Let's do it.
You know, cause we talked about that. Say what?
Is this my time to stand? Can I get out my pom-poms?
Yes. Do you have some?
No, but I do work with cheerleaders. So maybe I need to steal some. And I'm just like, yes, queens, let's go.
I was going to say you could borrow some, but stealing some works too. So
I'm totally stealing. I don't borrow.
Fair enough. So yeah, I mean, I don't really have a question around it. I just want to hear your thoughts around, I guess, the impact that them standing up for themselves. So what impact do you think that'll have on youth athletes today? And not just youth athletes, but all athletes.
So my first thought when this happens was, this is not the first time this has happened, but it's the first time that somebody's talked about it.
Yeah.
And that made me really, really happy, because there are countless athletes that we will never know their names who have struggled so badly and either forced themselves to compete and then totally choked out, or were forced to step away, withdraw, whatever, and then felt like they quote unquote looked stupid or didn't have a reason or had to fake a reason, something like that, because they weren't able to be honest, and or their coach wasn't able to accept perhaps that it was a mental health issue as opposed to like being injured, something like that. Because obviously those tangible things are easier for some people, some critics to accept. So I was so happy that they were able to articulate that, because that is new. The acceptance for that is new. And I think that that's really important. And I think also in 10 years, my hope is that having a mental injury will be equal to having a physical injury. Mm-hmm. And it will like not even be a conversation. It will be like not having to be like, I'm putting my mental health first. Like mental health will be so much a part of the conversation that they'll have their own psychologists with them. Like mental health will be such a part of the conversations that they have mental health screenings, just like they have physical screenings before they go to tournaments, that they'll have tournament psychologists, that they'll have tournament crisis centers, that they'll have tournament sports psychologists, things like that, that like mental health care will also be up to par with the other types of healthcare. That's my dream.
I love that.
I might be pushing it.
No, that's mine too. Years. Absolutely.
But that should 100% be the case, because we have medical teams, we have drug testing teams, we have assessment teams, we have physios, all of those things are provided for, but we don't have the mental health care. And I think by them speaking up and saying this, I mean, sports psychology has come up in the last 10 years and that's great, but we need the clinical sports psychologists to be added to the conversation, because they can actually help with the mental health side.
Yeah. And that actually brought up something that I haven't thought about when you're talking about, you know, that they actually said like, hey, I'm struggling with my mental health. I did the same thing when I was a kid. So I had anxiety my whole life and I called home sick from school all the time. But every single time I called home sick, it was that I had a stomach ache. I had a headache. It was never even did I tell my mom. I mean, I would tell her that I feel dizzy. That's the only way I knew how to talk about my anxiety at the time. Right. But it was never, I never told anyone that I was struggling mentally. It was just that there was something, I had to make up something of what was wrong with me physically so that I could get out of whatever I was doing that I couldn't handle at the moment. And I never thought about it until you said it just now.
I did the same thing, and mine were stomach issues from anxiety. Yep. And I always blamed it on my period. And my period was excessive when I was a child and very brutal, but I definitely blamed it on my cramps are too bad. I have to miss this game where I know that I'm going to have to perform and I'll choke out because my performance anxiety is so bad. Yeah. And you know, you're able to get it. We were able in the 2000s and 2010s to get it. We were able to get away with that. And it was the only way that like our like support staff like knew how to handle, because they were only dealing with like these tangible physical injuries. Like, okay, here, take this pill, go lay in bed for the next 3 days and you're good.
Right.
It's like, okay, I'm great. You know, like, there wasn't a, how can we support you? Hey, what do you need right now? What does support look like to you? Hey, do we need to step back from this? Like, there was no understanding for, I feel like I can't breathe right now because I'm panicking, you know, like,
it's it like, was, just push through it. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you can't push through it, then what are you, weak? Yeah. No.
That's what it used to be, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. We've come a long way in 10 years.
Yeah. And hoping that it'll continue to, you know, grow exponentially in the next 10 years, like you were saying, like that would be, that would totally change the game, and not just change the game, but like make it so much more, you know, human focused, as opposed to just like, you know, the athlete, like you talk about, of course.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we will always be humans even when we're not athletes anymore. And we're going to be humans when we're not soccer players anymore. We're going to be humans when we can't walk anymore. If we get so badly injured that we can never move anymore, we're still going to be humans. And if we don't support that underneath us, we're going to fall apart, because the athlete identity is then all we have left. And when we lose that, what do you do?
Mm. Speaking of identity, did you have a hard time? Did you have kind of an identity crisis when you were done playing?
Oh yeah. Big times. Yeah. And I hung on to that athlete card for as long as I could with,
me too.
You know, like, okay, I'm not a soccer player anymore. I'm a strength coach, and like, I'm still in the athletic realm, and I'm a power lifter now, and I'm an Olympic weightlifter. And I cycled through all of the sports trying to find something until I finally came down to like, I'm just okay being a fit human. And as long as I can demonstrate everything for my athletes and I don't have any pain, like I'm good with it. I don't need to be labeled an athlete anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was hard for me to let go of. What about you?
Yeah, me too. Like, I think I literally just this last year got over my identity as being a soccer player, like obviously our whole life. And then I was a soccer coach, and then I was a mental performance coach for soccer players. But now it's like, I've really worked on, you know, that's just what I do. And I'm not what I do. That's just what I do. Yeah. Right. And so that has been a very recent thing that I've kind of been able to break off of, I guess, is my identity. But I think that that's a huge topic, and we could spend hours, I mean, talking about all the stuff we're talking about today. But just since you brought up identity, I wanted to kind of see what your experiences was with it. And going along with that, then let's say there's an athlete and they're finishing college or finishing high school and they're not going to play anymore. Like, what, with your experience, what have you seen works as far as like how to let go of that identity, or maybe not let go, maybe that's not even the right word, but how do we move past just being that thing?
That's always complicated because it's so very individual. Yeah. Huge part of that being the social factors, like you can't go from being in a team, even if you're an individual sport athlete, like a tennis player, for example, where you have support staff around you, but especially soccer players, where you have 25 people who are always by your side. And you spend 24 hours a day with them almost. And the experiences that you guys have had together, like I had this a lot with my brother when he passed away, that we're co-rememberers of things. Like we've had these experiences together and only we know what that is like.
Yeah.
And those are like memories that you carry with you forever. But the only people who get it are the insiders who also lived that too. Mm-hmm. And so you need to, it's hard when you're transitioning from that sphere, but you have to find that somewhere else. So basically moving from, okay, having this experiences with this team, now I need to be in the middle of something else. And it's two-sided. I need to have the social factors of I'm in a group and I have this membership with other people where I feel loved and supported and accepted and part of a team. But I also need to learn how to become comfortable with aloneness, not loneliness, but just like the concept of being alone, like sitting with myself, having my own thoughts, having my own emotion, not just groupthink, like everybody's doing this mob mentality kind of thing, not just, oh, we're going partying, or, oh, we're going to go play, or, oh, we're going to run sprints. But like, I get to run my life now. Yeah. So what does it look like for me as a person, as an ex soccer player, as an ex athlete, whatever you choose to identify, if you just want to take it down one rung and say, I'm not a soccer player anymore, but I'm a fitness athlete, or I'm just an athlete, or I'm not an athlete anymore. Right. You pick that label for you. Right. But then get comfortable with being yourself, with being alone, with having your own autonomy, with choosing your own training plan, with whatever, and get used to that. And then look, where do I need support here? Do I need a coach? Do I need to hire somebody? do I need more groups of people around me? Do I need therapy? Do I need, you know, what is it that I need to support me in being the person that I am outside of my new group? So it's still important to have that group membership where we always have people around us, but also a lot of us as athletes who were in team sports, especially, never really learned how to be alone and we just turn out to be lonely.
Yeah. And you don't need, like you can be lonely with people around you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, absolutely. Yeah. So
but you can be alone and not be lonely.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I love that. So it's about having a community support around you, but also being okay with just being with yourself, because if you don't love being with yourself, then it's going to affect every area of your life and you're not really going to, you know, it's like so important to really love being with yourself. How do you do that?
I go to therapy. No, I was going to tack onto that and then I'll tell you how I do it. It's fascinating when I work on like relaxation techniques and mindfulness and stuff with athletes, and we add in mindfulness exercises or meditation, how often they pop those eyes open within 20 seconds and say, I can't do this, or cry in the middle of it, because it's like the concept of being in silence with yourself. Stuff comes up that you don't expect. Stuff comes up that you needed to push down in order to perform. And Shay's nodding her head in case you can't see this. If you're not watching the YouTube video, we're both nodding to each other. Like, you have to get comfortable with the concept of silence and being within yourself and being okay with that space, whatever you create that to be. For me, a big part of that has been like this meshing of actually figuring out who I am and putting all of my identities together. Yeah. Like, being confused as a kid, am I German? Am I American? Where do I belong? Like, where's my home? Like, where's my core group of people? What do I believe in? What are my values? What are important to me? Am I queer? Am I gay? Am I straight? Like, what's my whole thing? Am I an academic? What am I going to do with my life? What does success look like to me? Right. So being able to like define what success looks like for me, what an ideal life looks like for me, who do I love? Who do I care about? What are the groups that I want to be involved in? Not just the ones that I feel like I should be involved in,
right,
but like, what are the things that matter to me? And being able to like put that together. And at the end, this sounds super cheesy, but even being able to be accepted just by being called my name. Like, if in my bio, all it said was Julia, I would be okay with that. It doesn't have to be like Julia, sports neuroscientist, ex-athlete, does this,
all the labels. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is queer, is Catholic, is this, like, I don't need all those things anymore. It's just, I am Julia and I'm okay with that being my name. And like all of those multitudes are packed into my name, but I'm okay with you just saying that. Like, I don't need to explain anything else. So
I love that so much. Oh my gosh. And like, yeah. So I was kind of trying to get to meditation, right? Cause
let's
go. Because for me sitting, and that's why I was nodding so much. Cause like, I did it today for like an hour, and just there are sometimes where I fall asleep, but it's like, I've never been more happy and just accepting of everything since I've been meditating. And not just like, I used to just do guided meditations, but now I just sit and I don't have an agenda and I just sit. And sometimes I don't want to do it. I'm like, I need to do this. I need to do that. And that's why when you talked about the athletes where they close their eyes and 20 seconds later, they're like, no, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, meditation is so simple, but it's not easy. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not thinking about nothing. Don't worry.
Yeah. So for you, what does your meditation process look like? Just curious for my own selfish reasons.
Today, I love you so much. I started meditating in 2014 when I first met with a sports psychologist who then became one of my professors and then became one of my mentors. And she was a huge proponent. Shout out to Dr. Shu. You really saved my life. Thank you. She was huge into mindfulness meditation as a relaxation technique, because that's when sports psychology was really hitting back in 2014 and coming into what is the difference between mindfulness? Can we take that away from meditation, or is meditation too woo woo, et cetera? Yeah. And I needed guided meditation because I was in a place in my mind and heart that I couldn't, like, I needed somebody else's voice to guide me through it and like accompany me. And then gradually I shifted away from that to like being able to let my breath accompany me and my own thoughts just kind of be there. Cause she would always say, like, just let your thoughts pass you in a parade. Like, you're watching a parade. You can't stop the clouds from moving in the sky. You're not going to stop a train from going full speed on the tracks. Like, you can't do anything about this. So just you know, it's not learned helplessness or something like that, but just let it pass by. Like, it's not a danger to you. The emotion, the thought is just going to continue and then be done. Like, you don't have to hang on to it. It only stays if you hang on to it.
Yes.
And that took a long time to learn. So I started with three, four years of just using guided meditations, whether it was on YouTube or I would even say my own. And that kind of helped me to like anchor myself to my own voice.
Yeah.
Cause a lot of us have monologues in our head anyway. So we are hearing our own voices. And so it kind of helped me to like attach onto that. And it kind of felt a little bit more at home in myself to use that. And then I transitioned to just using my own breathing as an anchor. And I don't use my ribs. I use my nose because that's where I feel my breathing and like the back of my nostrils, and just focusing on that. And if nothing else is consistent, then that is.
For sure.
And I can open up my eyes anytime I want. I'm in a safe space. Like I meditate in a very specific place. Cause again, structure is super important for our nervous systems. And when things come up, to just know that like, it's fine. I don't have to intervene and it's still going to pass. And if I don't hold on to it, like the concept, like when I hold on to it, then it stays. And so if I want it to pass, then I have to let it go. And that's really hard to like create that distance, but it makes a huge difference for sports, because when we can create distance between our thoughts and our feelings and what is happening right now, we can just let that popcorn effect, like that popcorn machine of thoughts and emotions, go at it and in our heads and still be distant and being like, that doesn't affect me right now.
Mm-hmm. Quick curious.
Like, that's not a conscious thought.
Have you read the book Chatter?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm reading it right now just started it, but talking about distancing yourself and creating a bit of distance and separation between you and your thoughts. So that's, I think that's a really, really powerful thing.
Yeah, it really is. Just learning that again, it's like a popcorn machine. It will continue to throw random thoughts up there until you grab hold of one of them, but you don't have to, you can just kind of let it go. Or you can take the thoughts that are useful, because some thoughts will be useful and some thoughts will not be useful. Some emotions will be useful and some won't, you know, like there's some thoughts that say left foot to the upper right corner, and then you slam it into the back of the 90.
You're
sweet, baby. And then there's the next thought is, what if I trip over my shoelace and I bust my face, get a bloody nose, and it's super embarrassing, and then we lose, you know, like what happens if you, you know, just clock it into the upper 90, take that one and leave the other one.
Yeah.
But if you hold on to the wrong thought, then it sticks around and you've lost it and you've given it power. So learning how to create the distance and let it go. It's important.
So I know there's probably, you know, kids and parents and teenagers and all the people listening thinking, okay, you know, meditation, sure, but why should I do it? How is it going to help my performance? So talk about how meditation can help performance.
Oh gosh, where do I start? I taught meditation for several years when I was in my master's, because it was one of our interventions, and and several studies have found that even with 6 hours of meditation practice, we see differences in the structures of the brain.
Oh, wow.
So between 6 and 30 hours, you actually get a thickening of the parts of our cortex that help with memory, with help with emotional processing, that help with memory recall, for example. So those things are really great to have. The obviously our nervous system needs the relaxation that comes with meditation, the vagal stimulation. So if we want to get super technical, I'm not sure how technical you want to get, but like we have a nerve in our body called the vagus nerve, and it's attached to the part of our nervous system that helps us calm down and helps us to relax and helps us to recover. So when we can get into this meditative state, or when we can even just be mindful, we actually activate that and we're able to like fill up our bottle of relaxation, and we're able to allow our heart rate to slow down. We're able to recover faster, we're able to focus more. And think about when you're not in a super stressed out phase. If you can knock down your stress by a couple points, now you can focus better. Now you can make better decisions. Now your executive functioning is there. Now you're actually thinking critically, as opposed to like, you can actually be in flow state instead of being stressed out and holding tension in your body or in your brain. So apart from just having, you know, the structural benefit, the long-term benefit of, you know, thickened matter and having the cortical bonuses, as I like to call it, buying yourself more mental real estate, you could say, you have a huge neural benefit that you're able to distance yourself, like you said, from difficult emotions and thoughts and feelings, but you're also able to calm yourself down, kind of like a reset button on your physiology. Hey, chill out. Hey, crank it down. Hey, volume lower a couple notches.
I mean, I use that
yourself.
Yeah. Like I used the breathing thing yesterday. Like my heart rate was just like, you know, kind of going pretty fast. And in the past that would have led to probably a panic attack, but now I know it's like, you know, it's just there. But I did some, I really like alternate nostril breathing. Like that's one of my favorite ones to do. So I did that yesterday for like probably 3 to 5 minutes. And like after that 3 to 5 minutes, I was completely like back to my base level. Like my heart rate went down. So like, that's something you can do, you know, there's a ton of different breathing techniques, but like, it could be as simple as sitting on the couch and doing a breathing technique, or it can be meditation, or like whatever it is can completely like change your physiology. I don't know if that's the, if I'm not.
Like I said at the beginning, the we love structure. And so if you can use that as a tool, like you can't talk yourself out of being stressed out. There's no logic where you can be like, you're freaking out over nothing. Why are you being so dumb? This is the dumbest thing you could ever be doing. There's nothing to be scared of. Like, has that ever helped anybody? No, it just makes it worse. You talk yourself then into a hole, and that's like a nightmare scenario. So if you have something that's literally a physiological, like lower the volume button or change the channel button, that's what breathing does. And so I use physiological sighs because it's something that we do in our sleep. Have you ever heard of that? It's something that
no, I haven't.
Dr. Andrew Huberman has researched a lot at Stanford in his neuroscience lab. But it's two quick breaths in, filling the chest, and then slowly releasing. So it's through the nose.
Okay. And then exhale through the mouth.
And again. And what it does is there's sacs at the bottom of our lungs that are attached to that parasympathetic nervous system, or the system that calms us down, helps us recover. And they pop open when we do that second breath.
Oh, wow.
And so then that system is actually able to be activated. And through the slow exhalation, then we activate that vagus nerve, which again helps our whole body to calm down, helps us breathe through our diaphragm more, helps our digestion, helps our recovery. So lots of bonuses to using physiological sighs, because we're hitting, again, those cells at the bottom. The bronchi underneath in our lungs, the very lowest part that we usually don't get to, especially if we're breathing hard, especially if we're stressed out, we're overstimulated, or even just exertion. Especially if you have asthma as well, this can be a really good one, because it actually forces you to breathe into the bottom of your lungs. And like I said, get that relaxation part of the nervous system activated.
Nice. Well, I'm definitely going to use that for myself. Like that's so simple. What's the name of it again?
Physiological sighs. We do
that.
I think
I'm going to come up with an easier name.
Physio size.
Okay. Cause I'll probably, you know, teach my girls about it. So I don't know. They'll be like, okay, physio size. I can do that. All right. So I really wanted to get into talking about periods. So let's talk about periods. So let's talk about periods, and specifically, I guess my question for you is, how do our periods and the different phases of our periods, I know this is very broad, but how do the different phases of our periods affect our performance?
And this is where I tell you the very specific answer. I don't know. we don't have enough research to narrow down exactly what happens in every single phase. Like, we used to think that there was a bunch of joint laxity or whatever in certain phases of our period because of hormones. We used to always get told about like the Q angle with our hips and whatever. Yep. And when we had a certain hormone thing that we were at an ACL risk. That's not true.
Yep.
We don't know.
That's what I was told my whole, during my ACL, they always asked me, were you on your period when you got hurt? And I could never remember.
Let me tell
you
something.
But
physiological science was whack when we were, athletes.
Like the 2000s, early 2000s.
Oh my God, it was wild. Like we heard, and now you say that to anybody who actually knows what they're talking about in research, and they're like, this is not 2007. Cool it. but that's what we grew up in, and it's just not the case. So at the moment, we can't say anything specifically about when injuries are more likely. However, we know that it's super individual. It's psychological and physiological, because like 75% of female athletes have the feeling that their period negatively impacts their performance, like especially around PMS, when we start getting cramps and whatever, which totally makes sense because you're in pain. Like, why would you want to perform? Like, it hurts, it sucks, whatever. The best thing you want to be in bed with like a hot, what's it called? Like a hot bottle around your stomach, like with popping meds, like, oh my
God. Ice cream or something.
I just want to watch Golden Girls and eat chocolate. Like,
Golden Girls.
Also 2007 or 97.
I was going to say, we need to like, you know, I don't think the kids listening watch Golden Girls. I don't think they even know who Golden Girls. Gossip Girl.
RuPaul's Drag Race. No, I don't know anything. Yeah. But so it's psychological in the sense of we feel like it negatively impacts us, and that actually can have an impact then on our physiology. So if we feel like we're going to get hurt, or we feel like it sucks, if we feel like we're in pain already, so clearly this is going to bring a negative effect to our performance, then it probably will. So we need to treat, first of all, the perception. First of all, we don't know. And during your period, you could actually be more leistungsfähig, we say in English. You might actually perform better on your period because of the hormonal situation happening in your body at that moment. So don't get fooled. Pain doesn't necessarily mean injury. It doesn't necessarily mean poor performance. But it also doesn't guarantee that your performance is then going to be better. Again, like I said, we don't know, but studies are starting to suggest that actually when we're on our period, we might have superpowers.
Okay.
Now, we have the three different phases. So we have the follicular phase, and the beginning of that phase is when we get our period. Yep. Then we have ovulation, right smack in the middle. And then we have the luteal phase, which is then at the end, and PMS is the very last phase of that. And our hormones are going, woo, the whole time, right? And then as we get our period, then everything starts to even out, and that's why we think we have that performance benefit at that time. There are also some studies that suggest that we might be more aerobically fit, or like our endurance might be better at certain times, and we might be better, it might be more productive to train strength during certain times, but we're not entirely sure, so I don't want to give any false information. Hopefully in the next 3 years, we'll have studies that give us more details. What you should take away from this is none of those things guarantee injury, even the pain.
Yeah.
In fact, during our period, we might actually perform better.
Okay.
And it's super important that we track these things, because for some women, we get into depressive episodes during certain parts of our period, certain cycles.
Yeah.
We eat less during certain cycles, or eat more. We get more stressed during certain cycles, or we might even get injured during certain cycles. And as I said, it's so individual that we have to track this for ourselves. We just don't have the mass on data to be able to say this. So there's period tracking apps, and I really encourage everybody to go download that. Please.
I was just going to ask you that.
You can take your own data and you can figure out your own pattern. And that's super important to know then, hey, I twist my ankle all the time during the third week of my period, or during this part of my cycle. And it's really good to know that. Or, hey, I don't eat enough during this part of my cycle, and that negatively impacts my performance. Or I always have a sleep deficit because I have trouble staying asleep during this specific time. And we can then figure out that out and find solutions, like, hey, you need to eat more antioxidants during this phase going into this, or we need to eat higher iron going into the early follicular phase where we're going to get our period, because we don't want to be low on iron that will tank our performance.
Like, I probably over the last, you know, 4 to 6 months have I been like actually tracking my period. And the reason why I was doing it is because I was like, every month I was getting like in these really for a couple days, like sad. And I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I so sad? And so I started like tracking it, and I was like, you know what? Like, this is why I'm sad. And so just being able to track it, I was like, I gave myself grace, and I'm like, it's okay to be sad. Like, I don't need to be freaked out because I'm sad. And so for me, like not being an athlete, just knowing like kind of how my moods are during different phases, like, okay, don't schedule any interviews. So for example, for me, right before my period, I try to not do any interviews. I try to just have it be a week where it's just me like with myself, because I'm not really that motivated. I don't really want to work that much. So I think that's really, really important to start tracking your periods. Cause like you said, you can use for injuries, for your moods, you know, for your energy, for your sleep, like all that kind of stuff. Do you have an app that you, I think I know what you're going to say, but I want you to say it to everyone else. Is there an app that you recommend, for athletes to start tracking their periods?
Yes, there are two. If you're a cool iPhone user, then you can use the iOS Health app. Yes.
Oh, hey, super
let's go
cool.
iPhone TV. and that actually has a menstruation part in there. What's cool about that is because it has so much other data, like it has your activity data, it has your heart rate. If you have a smart anything, if you can, you know, if you have it linked up to any devices, it tracks actually a lot of stuff. And so it's cool to have that in there. It'll tell you like how long your cycle is, usually between like 25 to 35 days, how long your actual period is on average. And then it will estimate like when your period is going to come so that you can prepare for that, which is my favorite. I try to always be at home for like the 2 days when it could come, because I'm always so much more comfortable in my own house, like not in training camp, not at games. Like I just want to be at home. It's a tough day for me and I can plan then well. And it will actually sift out the patterns for you and tell you like, you tend to have these kinds of symptoms on this day. That's really cool. The iOS Health app is really nice. And then the Fitter Woman app is of course the one that in women's soccer, tends to get a good name, and it is a really amazing app. You can enter your symptoms even when you don't have a period, but then it also has the estimate. It also has some activity tracking and whatnot. And the nice thing about that is you can leave notes in there, for example, feeling depressed, feeling sad, or I'm struggling to eat, or this month I think my period's off because I'm having immense amounts of stress and it was late. So you can kind of write in there and explain why, because it's important to know as well. I'll make note of this, that it's people who have uteruses that need this. So even if you don't have a period actively, like if you're young and haven't had your period yet, or if you're old and have lost it, or if you are a trans man, for example, or a non-binary person, you still need to track yours as well, because it still impacts you. People who have had their uterus removed, you guys are kind of free on this one. Congrats on that. If you're pregnant, it would still be helpful to track the symptoms. So it can be, like I said, it's really beneficial to have all of your data in your phone. And I have a YouTube video that I can send you, Shay, to pop in the comments on how to actually track that data, like more specifically in those apps.
Awesome. Beautiful. Yeah. And actually I was looking at your YouTube. I'm like, dang, I need to like subscribe. You got a bunch of subscribers. Your YouTube videos are awesome. So with that being
said, get on God's internet and start running my mouth and just don't stop.
And that's what I love, is you're just so real and you just like, let's talk about periods, cause I want to talk about periods. So that's the video.
I think that's really how I started the video.
You did. And that's why I started the talking about periods like that, because I just watched that video. So I was trying to channel my inner Julia here, you know?
Yeah,
let's go. Okay. Well, I know that we've been talking, we could probably continue this. I'm like, we could, you know, like I would love to have you back on. But for the sake of time, we're going to kind of shelf it right there, but I want to know, for other people's sake, like, where can they find you? Tell us about your YouTube, your Instagram, like what else, you know, where everyone can find all your content and everything.
You can find me everywhere under at White Lion Performance. That's Instagram, Twitter. You can find me at the Julia Lion. YouTube, you can find me at White Lion Performance. LinkedIn, all of the cool places. Like I said, I really do get on Beyonce's internet and just run my mouth all the time. So you can just search my name and I am to be found. I also have a blog full of like, I think 200 articles at the moment. Also lots of stuff on periods, female performance, soccer, LGBTQ issues. If you're transitioning a non-binary person, a transgender person, anything else, gender fluid, how we work on issues specific to you there. I have all kinds of resources everywhere. So I would be happy to connect with you guys. If you have any questions, please let me know. And Shay, thanks as always for letting me have the mic.
Yeah, you always got so much. Yeah, so much great stuff. So guys, make sure you go follow her. Also, do us a favor, and if you're watching this episode, whether it's on YouTube or Spotify or iTunes or whatever it is, take a screenshot, tag me at Shay Hatto, tag Julia, let us know your biggest takeaway. And then Julia, in the future, let's do a podcast on, you know, there's just so many things, but one thing we didn't really hit on today, which we've talked about a little bit, is the whole LGBTQA thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you guys are listening, I think Julia and I will probably do a conversation on that coming up here pretty soon. But Julia, thank you again so much for coming on. It's always a great conversation and I look forward to the next one.
Thanks, Shay. It's always a pleasure.